This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hi, Placement Nation. For the final time, fingers crossed, in the GWWE project, you've made the cut. I'm JT. This is Aaron. We're juiced up from NXT and from ice cream, apparently. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. Like a whole pint.
A whole pint? What kind of ice cream?
It was Ben and Jerry's, the chocolate with the chocolate brownie inside of it.
So I'm living vicariously through you because I don't eat after like 8 o'clock anymore. So
I shouldn't, but yeah. I also speed ate it because I had it in my hand and it was like the pint and it was freezing my hand. Mm. So it was a race against the cold hurting my hand.
Yeah.
I may very well be sick.
I'll say, so if you puked during the show, although why? That's
it'll be clear.
So it's kind of cool tonight, Aaron, if we finish this thing off, because you made me aware earlier that it was 1 year ago today in this very seat. Well, for me, you were in a different seat, but we recorded our first GWWE pod blast on Marty Jannetty to kick off the project. Kind of, it was kind of one of the first things that got rolled out when the project started, and it was the first time we talked about anything to do with GWE on air. And now we're going to finish our list tonight. So in 1 year, we went to Pod Blast, making the cut, made the cut, and here we are tonight to wrap things up. Pretty cool, huh? Fitting?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird because it wasn't at all planned this way.
No, not at all. I was supposed to record with Chad tonight. We'll break the fourth wall a little bit. I was supposed to do Wrestling Warzone. He's sick, so we had to bail, and I messaged you and said, hey, you know, if you're around, I'm around. And you said, then you sent me the picture of 1 year ago today. And I'm like, oh, well, then we have to do it. And then you were like, it's not looking good. And that was like a half hour ago. And then I was like, all right, I guess we're not recording. And I kind of settled into my chair, ready to hang out and put on some ECW 1994. And then you messaged me, hey, I'm good. I'm like, oh, God, the roller coaster.
I know. The emotions we felt throughout this year were all felt tonight.
Yes. Angst, excitement, sadness, happiness. All of it.
It's all depression. Great depression.
Great depression because it's over. And what's over is us reviewing our list. And I'm actually excited because I think we're going to beat Scott and Nate. Not only are our list better, but we're gonna beat them because it seemed like we had no shot like a week ago. But we somehow churned out three in a week. So exciting.
When you say beat them, you mean our lists are way better.
Yes. Oh, right? Superior. Significantly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like not even close.
Yeah. Objectively.
Yeah. The evil one, Ben Morris, agrees. I know.
Ben is I feel a feud brewing, and I'm not happy about it.
With who?
Ben.
And us?
I feel. Yeah, no, me. Well, maybe you too. Oh. But I feel like a Johnny Gargano to his Tommaso Ciampa.
No, I think Ben loves us.
Oh.
He likes our lists. He likes how we name drop him.
Right. Not bad. Not bad.
Ben, he hasn't got enough Ben's love lately.
I saw a picture of him the other day without a shirt.
Looks like shit, huh?
No, I thought he looked amazing.
Oh,
see,
no,
this
really?
This is where the rift starts. This is where the rift starts.
He's a handsome
God
man.
God damn it. I'm trying to build bridges, and you're tearing them down.
I've met him in person. He's a handsome man. He's very fetching live.
The voice of an angel.
You have to really see him in person to appreciate those frying pan hands. Speaking of frying pan hands, The Big Show, number 14. No, I'm looking.
This isn't Scott's list. Come on.
No, Big Show's like the, you know, they have those three pictures, like enlightened, like the three brain pictures. Like Big Show is like in the middle, kind of. Like Scott's not there. You know, like Hillbilly Jim at 14 would be there.
SD Jones at 12.
We don't give a fuck Saturdays. Okay, here we go.
Ice cream, baby.
We left off on number 14, so our final 14. Here we go. Daniel Bryan was our 15, if you recall. That's where we last left. Our cumulative 14, he was number 13 on your list and number 15 on mine. You actually had him higher, even though he's like one of my top three of all time, probably.
Yeah.
And that is your Olympic hero, my Olympic hero, Kurt Angle.
In fairness, he's not my Olymp. I'm Canadian, so he's not a hero for me at all.
You just kind of observe him from beyond the border.
Yeah, you know, and I feel it gives me a good objective eye on him, you know?
Okay. By the way, I started Better Call Saul.
Why?
Tell you that. It's really I'm 1.5 in.
Hold on. Let's sort this out. You were to tell me when you were starting so that I could start it.
I just told you. I'm only like halfway through episode 2. You can catch up.
See, this is why we have problems.
We don't communicate. So this is how it happened. All right, this is how it happened. I was at the gym, and I finished Silicon Valley like 20 minutes into my workout, and I panicked. Huh? I needed something to watch, and I'm like, I'm just going to do Better Call Saul. So I watched like the first like 40 minutes, and then I went back today, and we hadn't talked, and I was like, I'm just gonna keep going. So, but you should watch it. You should catch up. But you have a lot to watch.
You've written me, okay? You've sent me messages to say, hey, go check out this comment here. And then something as monumental as Better Call Saul, you leave me in the goddamn dark.
It's 1.5 in. You can catch that up tonight. We'll be good.
When? What am I going to go to bed at 3 in the morning? I get woken up in the morning by the kids. I don't get to go to bed at night.
Tomorrow's Father's Day. You should be able to do what you want.
I'm going to do what I want. And right. Yeah, that's a threat. If anyone takes it, that's a threat, all right?
I probably won't watch again until like Tuesday, so you got time.
I got something else to watch, all right? So
yeah, you do. Episode 2.
I know.
Another episode 2. Okay. Number 14 is Kurt Angle. I love Kurt Angle. I know some of the criticisms that exist about his go-go-go style, but fuck it. He's all in. I've always loved it. I think what dings him just slightly, and actually I'm curious how he does compare as we move up the list, longevity-wise. Because his run is, you know, a touch shorter than you may realize when you think about him, because it seems like he was around for so long. What's it about, 6 years?
Six and a half, seven. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good run. I mean, it's a healthy run.
Yeah.
But when you start to move up the list, some of these guys just have more. Although, well, maybe not. Maybe not all of them. But I also, I don't know. Like, I'm looking. I'm like, could I have had him higher? I don't know.
Well, we did the whole triple threat match with him and Bret Hart and Foley, right?
Yeah, we broke through those guys a lot. I mean, maybe like we talked about Brian last time. I'm trying. Yeah. Who else do you have? Do I have above him that you don't? Oh, Brett.
You have Punk. I have Punk above him.
It's
too.
Brett and Daniel Bryan. You had after him that I had before him, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but Brett sucks, and I don't care what Greg Phillips says. Brett sucks.
I don't care what Greg Phillips says either, but I don't think Brett sucks.
No, he does, because I'm disagreeing on principle with Greg Phillips right now.
Well, that's
for
okay.
No reason. All right,
I'm here for that. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Oh God, my head is. I got a brain freeze. Hold on.
Oh, I thought you were still upset about Breaking Call Saul. I was like, come on, man, we're okay.
Well, I'm upset about that also, but I'm trying to get past it.
Yeah,
and it's not Breaking Call Saul. I don't know what that is, and I don't want to ever.
Is that what
say
I just said?
Again. Yes,
I really said Breaking Call Saul.
You did, and you're going to go back and listen to it and be disappointed in yourself.
Maybe I should eat some ice cream. I was at the beach all day. I'm like burned up.
Yeah, I'm burned too. I'm burned on the tip of my ears.
Oh, that's weird. Mine's mainly in my chest. Yeah. But I'm like overheating. You know when you overheat when you're burnt? Like that's where I'm at right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ice cream.
All right. So we've been recording for like 10 minutes and we've talked nothing about Kurt Angle. So this is why we get sidetracked all the time. This is why it takes us a year to get through this.
This is why we're not finishing tonight.
Kurt Angle, I love you. Great promo, heel face, memorable storylines, memorable matches, not much bad. Like, what's the worst stuff? Maybe like some of that early 06 here and there, like the Mark Henry at the Rumble. Is that the bad one?
No.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Mark Henry never has bad matches. That's right.
Are you out of your fucking mind?
That's right. He's a hero to all.
I love him. Eugene, I like him, but I like him beating up Eugene.
Yeah, well, and it screams like why he's 30 spots higher than Triple H, because Triple H fights Eugene and it's like dog shit, boring and awful. Yeah. And Angle murders him and it's like the greatest thing ever.
And Angle eats him up way more.
Oh yeah, Angle just dismantles him. But you know, it is what it is. But you know, if it was a year earlier and Angle was fighting him in his peak, that he would have fed a ton for him and probably put
of
him
course.
Over. Yeah, that's what made him so great. Yeah. Favorite matches.
Oh God! You know what? The more I think about it, I think my favorite of his matches might very well be Steve Austin at SummerSlam 01.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite. I love the Shane match. I don't care.
Oh yeah,
unapologetic yeah. about it. Him just trying to end his life over and over.
His one is insane. He's got that. He's got the SummerSlam. The SummerSlam. He's got
see the love triple.
Fuck this guy. He's got the triple threat with RVD and Austin, which is also great.
Yeah,
he's got a ton of great matches.
Well, all the Benoit matches.
Oh yeah. An Undertaker in 06 is that the renaissance of Undertaker right there?
That's what ignites it. The Orton stuff kind of was like got the kindling going, and then Angle's like the gas yeah. poured onto it. No, that's great. I like the WrestleMania 22 three-way a lot, even though they don't get a lot of time. Like, Angle's just a possessed crazy man. But I was going to say, the Henry feud, like, I didn't mind their second match, I think, was okay. But the one at the Rumble is awful. And then the Booker bestiality feud is pretty rough. His late 04 stuff, too, is a little shaky with Team Angle, like the shit Team Angle, the Jinder Mahal one.
Right,
against
right.
Eddie and all that, and Big Show and all that stuff like that. That Kurt was kind of shaky, but everything else is pretty.
But his
in
ring was still great. Like,
oh
even
yeah,
his
yeah.
During this, booking was shaky. Yeah, I don't know. Like, see, I think for me, that's what sets him above a guy like Brett. Like, I have him one spot above Brett, and Brett probably has more longevity and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I feel Brett's got some bad. Like, not Undertaker level bad, but he's got some bad, and I think right. that's kind of what. Because I view them as actually quite similar.
He's Breaking Bad.
Breaking Saul or whatever the fuck you call it.
Breaking Bad Saul. Yeah, no, yeah. I can see the argument. I think Brett's a better worker. Like, Angle's great, like, a great... He's kind of secretly, like, just a super spot monkey. Well, it's probably not secretly. I think everyone says it. But
no,
it's,
not.
Huh?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He is yeah. that. But I will say this.
But he might be the best spot monkey.
Yeah. But Brett is like a more intelligent worker and whatnot, but I don't think it always bore itself out to better matches.
Maybe not. But I think he's a better, like, across-the-board worker, like, storyteller. Like, Angle has great matches, but his, like, I don't remember too many great, like, stories within the match for Angle. You know what I mean? Like, I thought one of my favorite things of Brett is his in-ring storytelling, of like, the way he weaves it into the match. I don't know. I mean, it's a good argument. We've had the argument. It's yeah. a good argument. Kurt, top 15 for a guy that was around 6 years injured. And the thing is, too, he was injured for a bunch of that, too. Like, he's around all that time, but he misses, like, three yeah. or 4 months at a stretch a bunch of times with the neck injuries. But still, I mean, his hit rate is high. It's clear. I mean, for him to even be top 15, I think is, you know, I think it's worthy. Like, a top 15 wrestler in the company's history speaks very highly of him.
Where did he finish overall globally on the list?
Globally, so that's Canada, U.S., Mexico.
That's the globe.
And beyond. Our buddy Nicolaj. Let's see. Angle finished 14th overall.
Okay, so we're in, like, he's really just split the difference between you and I.
Right. Someone had him at 1, and someone had him at 98.
Such a vast contrast.
It is. I'm trying to see who had him at 1. It was El Groino.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And 98. It may take me a minute, so if you want to talk any more about Kurt while I try and find it.
I respect El Groino, just so we're clear. All right? That man has probably had a very hard life with that name.
True.
And you can't discount the kind of psychological trauma that that name can cause you or I.
True.
Or Saul.
Yes. Oh God. Stephen Graham had him at 98. No fucking El Torito is 4 spots higher.
No.
Fucking worst. All right.
Is Shawn Michaels at 99?
Who cares? don't even want to justify him anymore by talking about a stupid waste of a list. He did have Triple H at 100.
Oh, okay, good.
Nikki Bella at 92, if you want to feel worse about yourself.
I feel worse. Nikki Bella ahead of Kurt Angle. Yeah, because, you know, when I think professional wrestler, I think Nikki Bella. Oh, no, wait. I don't want to talk to – you know what? I'm going to recount on Nikki Bella. Retract. Nikki Bella is a once-in-a-lifetime talent.
Actually, I'm going into, like, the 30s on his list. I haven't hit Sean yet. No, he had him at 20.
Okay. All right.
He had Mark Henry at 14.
Yeah, right. Is he had Hulk Hogan, like, on now?
He has Greg Valentine at 12, Hogan at 9, Tito at 8.
Okay. Well, Mark Henry, 14, you know.
Yeah.
Well, after that amazing angle feud.
All right. Let's go on. We love Kurt Angle. All right. Number 13, the guy I had ranked 14th, you had him 12th, so a touch higher, and that is Chick Magnet Punk.
It sucks that that's on the record, right?
It is. It's such a stupid thing.
Yeah. Was the lawyer just a fan who wanted that out there?
And who knew? Like, couldn't Punk just have lied?
He perjured himself over CM?
Yeah, but who would know? Like, is it anywhere? Like, did anyone know besides him? Like, how could they prove that he perjured? You know what I mean?
What if
Cabana, does he have a birth certificate with fucking Chick Magnet Punk on it? I mean it's got to be, you know, like who else would have had access to that information?
I don't know. You never know what's going to come back.
Did he tell like Ashley Massaro while he was banging her or whatever?
Actually, it's going to be a Chick Magnet, yeah.
Whatever. Get down. All right, so yeah, Punk. All right, so Punk and Angle to me is interesting. We had him both. We both had Punk ahead of Angle by one spot.
Yeah.
So do you feel like Punk has better matches than Angle?
I think his high end is. Like, I legitimately think I'm going through something where I watch. Going through a lot. I'm going through something where I'm watching all the
yeah, you don't stay up till 3, right? Yeah.
No, not at all. I'm watching all the pay-per-view years, and I think there's a genuine case that Punk Cena from Money in the Bank 2011 – might be the best match in company history. I think that I know that's kind of a weird view because but putting it up against the other best ones, I don't see that much of a differential. And then you factor in the storyline and the the atmosphere and everything, and the work in the match is tremendous too. So I think his high end is actually maybe a tad higher. Like Steve Austin Angle, maybe I'd have top 15 or 20. And Punk, I definitely have that ahead. I would probably have
him
Punk
and Brock.
Lesnar ahead. Yeah. Not The Undertaker, although I think that match is amazing. But but I think that those are his. I mean, even I don't think I would have the rematch from SummerSlam with Cena either. But that's also I also think that match is incredible. Like
and he's got the Bryan matches too.
And then I mean, I do think he's. Like, I think Kurt's a great promo, but I think Punk's a better promo than Kurt.
Mm. Well, I think Kurt has better variance in his promos. Like, I mean, it's not easy doing the levels that Kurt does. I mean, you know, right? So, like, comedy and wrestling, and comedy in general is obviously very hard, but comedy and wrestling is incredibly hard. And Angle's, like, on the short list of guys that were really fucking good at it, unbelievably good. And even, like, you know, up to as recently as his Hall of Fame speech, like, really good at it. But I do think like Punk is a better serious dramatic promo than Kurt. I'll say that.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think Punk could do like the comedy shit that
he's funny, but it's all like snark and insider stuff.
Yeah. Which is
makes him funny. Like he was very funny on commentary when he had that run when he was hurt.
Yeah. He's funny, but it's not comedy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's more just, I can't believe he just said that.
Right, he's just kind of being a dick, right? So, I mean, he's like Kurt's legit out there doing, like, comedy, like, pure sketch stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he could have been on SNL, like, half the time. Like, all the stuff he was doing with the cowboy hats and the sheriff stuff and Milk, you know, all the Milk and Austin and Vince. And, like, there's so much funny stuff in there. We didn't really talk about his moments either, but the more I think about it, I might have had him a tick higher than Punk. I don't know. Like, I feel like Kurt's coming back has made me think and revisit him more, like, in this time period. I guess it was last year he came back when we were still voting, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And by the way, like, you know, if we would have opened it up to this year, like, he now has that Rousey WrestleMania match on his resume, which was excellent.
Yeah, but he's not really doing much. It's not because of him that it's awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would still give him some credit for, like, I'm sure he was walking her through. Like, you see him kind of positioning her and prepping a lot throughout that match. I mean, Triple H was fantastic, but I think Angle, you see him leading throughout that match. Like, he's always in the right spot and making sure everyone's in the right spot. I think he was quarterbacking a lot of that.
I heard that the agent for that match was Nikki Bella, and they picked her brain, and look at what they came up with.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Punk. But no, so what was I saying? Oh, Kurt, I think, has more moments. I think the moments thing is where Punk lacks. Like, he's got the pipe bomb.
He's got the singing to Ray's
daughter.
He's got the whole Jeff Hardy feud. He's got the two Money in the Bank wins, the two cash-ins. I mean...
No, he's got moments. I just feel like Kurt's are like iconic. Like, Milkmania is like, that may be a top moment. I mean, I guess that's his pipe bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what would be his second best moment, Kurt?
Kissing Steph, probably.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's a great. I mean, that was huge at the time where he kissed her before SummerSlam.
You know, yeah, you're right. And you know, it's funny. Both of those angles derailed by Triple H.
Most are. That's why he's number 40.
And at the same time of year.
Right.
September comes around and Triple H just doesn't want to do business anymore.
Everyone in the company is like, wake me up when September ends. All right.
What Punk's other great moments, I mean, he's got – I mean, that pipe bomb's awesome, but that entire month leading up to that match is awesome. Like, the contract signing with Vince is really great, too. And
right.
His match with Vince is great, too.
Don't they have a match? Is that him?
Yeah, they do. And that's old Vince.
Right.
Like, that's really old Vince. That's post-Bret Hart Vince.
Yeah, that's probably Vince's last hurrah, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, yeah, and then you got – I would say a lot of his – I mean, his stuff as the against The Undertaker was pretty despicable.
Yeah.
But you couldn't say he didn't go all in.
No. That's – I mean, a lot of that – I feel like he caught, like, because everyone loved him, like, fans, I feel like he got a pass for some of that stuff, and, like, he kind of got pinned on the booking team. Like, imagine if, like Triple H did exactly the same thing Punk did in that feud. Like, the outrage would have been even off the fucking charts, you know?
Right, but the problem with Triple H is, like, with that, is that it's like, well, no, there's a very good chance he wrote that also.
Right. All right, well, even, like, Dolph Ziggler. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of someone else that, like, the fans aren't, like, super behind, you know, like, doing that.
Like Roman Reigns.
Right, yes, if Reigns does that, imagine the outrage.
Dumps out Paul Bearer's ashes.
Right, like, but because it was Punk, it was okay.
Believe that.
The big dog's playing in the ashes.
He's rolling around, okay?
By God.
My God, someone stop the dog.
The big dog is pissing in Paul Bearer's ashes.
And now he's leaving like a scalding dog. Now, is the dog... Has the dog had hot water poured on it?
No.
Or does he mean to say scalded dog?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like a, but it sounds like he's saying scalded.
He's definitely saying scalded.
Yeah. So I don't know what he means. I don't know if he means scolded or if he's literally, like hot water is being poured on or tea or coffee or something. Maybe that's where they get the inspiration for the Kane feud, for the Kane Jericho feud.
A scalded Jericho!
That dog! And then the dog, right? They ran over the dog. That's Jericho's whole 2000 to 2002. A lot of scalded dogs.
Scalded dog!
Damn right, pal! We're going to scald him, and then we're going to put him with a dog!
We're going to run it over with a car.
Bitch. All right. Anything else on CM Punk?
He's great.
Our top 14 is going to be all tangents. That's it. That's all.
Well, because we've talked about all these guys before.
We'll just get all shit in at this point.
Yeah, they're all great. Yeah, we'll get our shit in.
Push it out. All right. Number 12. This was another guy we debated quite a bit. And this was one for sure. And he was my 12 and you're 11. Actually, well, hang on. Let me see. Did I say where Punk finished? Punk finished 15 overall. He had a high of 2, a low of 99. Of course. I can't wait. We'll talk about this. Who had the lowest low? It's coming up. But
yeah, I know who it is, and I'm already upset.
You mean the highest low, I should say.
Yes.
That's what I meant to say.
Mick Foley. Now, who, like, so you have him at 12, and I have him at 11.
Right. But when I first started this list, like, did you picture Foley being this high on your list?
No. In fact, I'd forgotten about him.
Right. That's right.
Entirely. And then, because, like, I think we've been through this, but the way I did my list was I basically put down the list and started ranking them against each other.
Right.
And so Foley wasn't even on my list. Like, and then I'm like, oh, my God, I got it. And I started it from the back against, like, Billy Gunn and The Godfather. And he quickly made his way, and he just kept rising and rising and rising. And there was no reason to pull him back and not have him keep going.
Yeah, it's like that. Like, he just has a sneaky, all-time great WWE career. Like, I mean, you always knew he was like a legend, but I think it sneaks up on you just how high he would finish when you think of him. Because I still think, to some, he probably is like a WCW, ECW guy. Would you think that?
I don't think so anymore. Like, his WWE stuff is just too iconic now.
Yeah, I agree. But I think because he didn't start there. He came in at the right time. Because 96 is kind of that reboot, right? Where they kind of reset the whole company almost and rebuild on a whole new group of guys.
With all the WCW guys.
Basically, all the guys that got cast off by, like, Hogan coming in. You know, Dustin Rhodes,
yep.
Pillman, Austin, Foley, Vader. I mean, like, all these guys came in, right? And they kind of rebuilt the company around them all. All them and Sean, pretty much. I don't know. So I guess my point is that you don't think of him as like a lifer. Like when I look at this top 10, like these are the guys who leaped to your mind as WWF guys first. And I don't think Foley's like an immediate boom. I think WWF when I think of Mick Foley. Like you do, but you don't. At least I don't. But then when you dig into it, it's like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, I think actually what hurts him in terms of a lifer is that he went somewhere after. Like right. He went and did that stint in TNA, for me anyway. Like that he didn't – like Jericho is a lifer. He's doing right. New Japan now, right? But like he's not going to go to TNA or like Ring of Honor or right. whatever and do a career. Then again, who knows? Maybe he will now. But he didn't leave and then write a book about how bitter he was about his commentary experience.
Right. Whatnot. It almost feels like a pit stop at times for Foley, you know? Like – because he's just always I mean Jericho's a good comp for him in that regard. But so Foley, his first run is 4 years and that's it, and then he's got a bunch of other stuff tacked on. Would you have had him this high without the, say he actually retires in 2000 and he's done, is he still this high for you?
Maybe, because like he comes back and does great stuff. But he also comes back and does some kind of crappy stuff too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it does pad his case a bit, but I don't know how much he'd get dinged for it. And it's funny because we were talking about just before Kurt Angle, his run not being long enough. It's longer than Foley's and it's not even an issue here.
Yeah. No, I think Foley's just got more moments. I mean, that's to me. And I Foley's a better promo. Foley's arguably, you know, when I look at this list, he's maybe top three promo.
Yeah, and it can go any way with him too.
Right.
You can do comedy, you can do serious, you can do like really frightening.
Because like we talked about Piper, and everyone always says like he may be the best talker ever, but we talked about Face Piper like not being that great. You know, like heel Piper's awesome. He may be the best heel promo of all time, but Foley, yes. Heel, face, comedy, serious. He's kind of like Kurt, like one leveled up.
Yeah.
Because Kurt doesn't have the serious stuff that Foley's done.
No. And then he's got the in-ring pedigree that like, and a weird variety of matches too.
Right.
He's got the ones where he's tossed off the cage, but then he's got that mind games match, which is just a tremendous wrestling match. And, you know, it kind of goes all over the place with Foley.
Right. He's got over the edge with Austin, which is five.
Easy.
Just awesome. And then, with his comeback, you get the Orton match and you get the, Edge match at WrestleMania, and you get the one night stand six man, which is awesome. And, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but the Flair match helps.
It's okay. It's that Flair match just suffers from like that stupid Melina storyline.
Right. Up until that, it's really good.
But that he believed, I don't know if you've ever read his book when he talks about it, mm-hmm. but he believed it would be the greatest storyline of all time.
He believed that about a lot of things. Like Funk yeah, coming out. True. Remember, he was like, oh, Funk was going to get this crazy fucking reaction. It was just like nothing.
No one cared.
But that was a great match, too. So, I mean, I don't think as bad as too bad in the comeback. Like, what's his worst stuff? The Carlito fucking match.
Yeah, the one where he's in the title match, where he's in like this—is it the six-way?
Yeah, the five or six-way, whatever. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, that's probably it, right? Because even WrestleMania 20 is really good.
Yeah, look, his bad is the bulk of 99.
Right.
That's his bad.
And he was hurt. I mean, he was hurt pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you don't want to hold it against him, but it did exist, and he wasn't good in it. Like, but then his 96 is very strong. His 97 is very strong. His 98 is mm-hmm. an all-time year, like, when you really look at the scope of it. And then his 2000, he's not there long, but every match he's in is, what, close to – is 4.5, except for the WrestleMania one, I guess.
Right, but the two – yeah, the big two, the Rumble and, yeah, and the 10-man, the Dallas 10-man.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that one too. So, yeah, like, his resume is –
yeah, I mean, and think about his moments, right? He's got the Worcester title win. He's got the Hell in a Cell. He's got the attack on Taker on his debut night. I'm trying to think of the other ones I had in mind. I mean, you know, obviously the Orton stuff.
The Cactus Jack turn in 97.
Yes. Yep, Cactus Jack. And then his Cactus Jack turn in 2000 when he comes out as Cactus against Triple H.
Yeah.
Trying to think what
else. Triple H actually sells fear.
For once.
The rare instance. I got to get this in because Ben has been on me about saying too many positive things about Triple H. So
I do love the One Night Stand promo was great too.
Oh yeah, that
yeah. I sold out at Madison Square Garden. That was fucking.
What did he say about when ECW had proper leadership?
Right.
The leadership of Stephanie McMahon Helmsley.
Yeah, he's got the Dude Love debut with Austin.
Yeah.
And then Dude Love again, dancing with Vince. That's like a great moment.
Oh, yeah. I bet a lot of that is Vince dancing, because anytime Vince dances. Right.
Yes.
What's a better Vince dance? That one or when the Saints go marching in?
Oh, Saints go marching in is the best.
Saints go all-time dance.
And then also all the, you know, the dad, the fucking Yerpel, the friggin', you know, like all that shit. In late 90s.
Yeah, the Mr. Socko. And
yeah. This Is Your Life. I mean, as pedantic as it yeah. is these days, it still was a top-rated segment.
He was a very good foil for Vince during that period.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he blows that whistle in Vince's face in the hospital, Vince, damn it, leave.
Well, it was so well done where he was like the... It was like the black sheep of the family, you know, like that. They played it so well. Like, he's dealing with this arch enemy, and he's got Chris Farley running around his fucking hospital room. He's going to deal with, you know. So it's like, it's so perfect. This is, you know, this embarrassment he's trying to use like to his advantage, but he can't fucking stand him. He hits him so much, you know, that he finally finds the guy he can use to make, you know, embarrass him or whatever.
Yeah, and so, like, I have him ahead of a guy. I know we keep coming back to Brett, but I have him ahead of a guy like Brett. But again, because I just think there's so few real lows. Like, even the bad stuff with Foley, I don't mind watching it. Like, I mean, we're going to get to Brett at some point.
Yeah.
But at its worst, some of those matches I feel are almost unwatchable. So,
yes.
And that's, to me, the differential. And, like, I was – we'll get there when we talk to Brett.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our number 11. And I'm curious your thoughts on how his stock would – if it would drop – if this was this year, and that is the man I had at 11, you had him at 10, and that is the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar.
Incarnate?
Yeah. So, Brock...
Incarnate.
Fuck. All right, come on, 11 more.
Ice cream is wearing off. I need some more hate. Who do we hate that we can talk about?
Well, you can pretend you're on Twitter and hate Brock Lesnar and say he's out of shape.
That I could.
I mean, I love Brock. I do. But I'm a pretty big Brock defender. But even I would say, I think if we're voting this year, you know, his stock drops. And like, well, last year too was shaky at times, but the Goldberg feud was so fucking good that it carried him a lot. You know, like that re-raised him. He was already high, but like that helped so much in my eyes.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. What else did he do last year? Oh, the SummerSlam four way, the Braun, the Joe.
So I wonder with Brock, because like, you know, I've never seen the Strowman match, so I don't know how it is.
It's all right, but it's disappointing.
But I remember the Joe match, there being some really interesting things in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it felt like in an effort to build up the F5 again, the matches, what made his matches great before was the epic feel of them. And I find they kind of stripped him of that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that is him or not. Okay. Because like I've heard the argument that like he's selfish and he's doing this and he's doing that, but like this is also a guy who's never had a problem really doing much in the past.
Right.
So like, I have trouble placing the blame in this instance.
I think if you want to put any blame, it's that there are times where he probably shows up unmotivated, like the Ambrose WrestleMania match, right? And I think some of that's on Ambrose. I don't think it's all on Brock, but yeah. Like that's a black mark on Brock. Like that's a ship mania match where he could have had a really fun brawl. He did seem kind of checked out in that one. But he's got so much good stuff. I mean, he's got so much good stuff. Even if he never came back in 04, I mean, after 04, he'd probably still check in pretty high. He wouldn't be top 11, 10, but he had a lot of great stuff in that first run. But then
what's his best match pre? Is it The Rock when he wins the title?
Rock and one of the Angle maybe.
I really dig the Mania one. Yeah,
yeah, that's probably his best. And then with Eddie and Rock are probably next.
Yeah, but nothing compared to the quality he had when he came back.
No, so I think he still does okay because he was still really good. Yeah. You know, he makes the list comfortably, probably in the top half, I think. But now, yes, you get the Extreme Rules, the Cena comeback match, which was awesome. And then he hits the lull, right? He's got the Triple H series. And then business picks back up. He gets the Punk match. What came after that?
Rumble.
Oh, yeah, the Big Show stuff.
And then he ends the streak, which...
Right, big
was
moment.
The match was... Yeah, the moment is amazing.
Right.
Then he kills Cena.
Yep.
You got the triple threat at the Rumble. With Rollins and Cena.
Five.
The Reigns match, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then that summer he fights Taker, in which they're all
matches.
Very good.
Yeah.
When do we see him again?
Yeah, so, Ambrose.
Then Ambrose, which isn't great. And he does Orton, which I don't mind. People seem to not like it, right. But I don't mind that one.
I think that wasn't the main event. People would be different on it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Like, I didn't mind the ending. I thought the ending was interesting.
Right.
But, yeah, like once you get to 16, 17, 18, the luster is gone.
Yeah, but see, the Goldberg stuff I loved. Like,
Sorry, you're right. The Goldberg stuff. Yes, I'm on board.
Yeah, so I think after 33, it started to dull. But even, like, remember he had that match with Rollins that was kind of disappointing. What was that, in 15? But Rollins was rough.
But I have a theory about that. Like, my theory on it is that, like, he got put into, like, his match with Cena is amazing. His match with Reigns is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe both of those are very much based on the catharsis of watching those two guys get fucking killed.
Right.
And you just didn't have that with Rollins.
Right.
And they did the same style of match. And then they wonder why it didn't work. And it made sense that it didn't work because like the fans didn't have the same level of vitriol for Rollins, even though they tried their best. To build him up as a heel, but they didn't have the vitriol they had for a Reigns or for a Cena.
And did he do anything in 14 between ending the streak and Cena?
No. Oh, well, how did he get that title shot? Did he just demand it?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Because I feel the only man who should be making demands of anyone is Sid. He's the one who makes demands.
Right. Well, he's angry. He got passed over WrestleMania 8.
Crumpled that paper.
Bogus.
Ever pulled off.
I mean, I just don't see the case to having Brock lower unless you just have, like, I mean, I get it. Some people have personal issue with him, but I don't think he wrestled. Like, he doesn't have much bad. He didn't wrestle enough to have enough bad. You know, like.
But even his bad, like, we're talking about the Ambrose match, but I still think that match is actually fine.
Right.
Like,
has he ever had, like, a legit fucking dud? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think so. Even the Triple H matches, like, the Mania one is probably the worst.
The Mania one is probably the worst.
Yeah. And what's that? And I haven't seen it in forever, but.
maybe 2.5.
Right.
You know, like I'm just kind of winging it, you know.
It was disappointing because we felt at the time that he was only going to be there for like a year or 2 years, whatever it was. And they were blowing three matches on Triple H, right? What, because he was on the per match deal or whatever the fuck it was. And I think it was almost worse in the moment because we're like, oh God, they're having a three match series. Like, let's get these, you know, he's got so many other guys he could be fighting and we're dealing with this shit.
I don't understand his contract. I don't pretend to understand his contract. But if it's – I don't know if his contract is per match or per appearance. Mm-hmm. But from the time he was champion in 14 until 15, I never understood why they just didn't keep him off Raw and just have him wrestle at every pay-per-view.
Right.
Like they're trying to sell the network at that point too. So like you could have made that a selling point because his appearances on Raw, I mean, there's a couple of good pull-apart brawls. But he doesn't need to be there at all.
Right. Does he ever even wrestle? Has he wrestled on Raw?
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
All right. Well, I mean, obviously lacking in promo skills, but I think he even more than makes up for it in charisma, connection, character, just everything about him. I mean, the Heyman's just part of the package at this point. Almost, you know, is it fair to give him credit for Heyman? I don't know. But the way he completely gives himself up to this fat, balding piece of shit. It's like his mouthpiece, you know, like it's almost admirable in a way. Like, yeah, okay, you do all the time.
If I may, sir, Brock Lesnar.
So,
I think I made this point when we talked about him earlier, but I'll just reiterate it here. I think if you were to take like a picture of Brock at his best, mm-hmm. like in terms of how he moves around the ring, his mannerisms, how he portrays his character, I think there's a case to be made he might be the best professional wrestler of all time. Like, I don't think he has the catalog to say he's the greatest of all time. But, like, you watch him in that Cena match where he's killing him, and every movement is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he's doing, the trash talking, the way he moves, the way he snaps his moves. Like, he's a real special talent, and I'm glad he came back. Like, I'm sure some people aren't, but I was thinking about it the other day. It's like 6 years he's been back.
Yeah.
It's way longer than his original run, but probably way less matches.
Right, his original run was, what, 2 years? Exactly, yeah. I think, so.
He wouldn't make a lot of people's list on that 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. I assumed he'd be a lock, but I guess you know, the more we talk about it, I would think. I mean, I still think he had the catalog then. And actually, I think people kind of liked him more still. Like, I think I don't think he had the stigma of, you know, those that don't like him dismiss him as lazy or, you know, he only showing up when he wants and blah, blah, blah. Like, all the stuff that kind of plagues him now, like, I don't think he had. Like, there may have been folks angry at the way he left and kind of robbing us of more goodness, but right. I think...
Wait, are you suggesting there are fans that get mad at wrestlers personally when they leave the company?
So number 10 on our list.
Yep.
Is a man I had at 9 and you had at 14, the guy you hate, and that is Bret the Hitman Hart.
I hate him so much I put him at 14.
Brock finishes 16, by the way. High of 3, low of 96.
96, okay. Interesting.
And Brett finished at 5 overall. High of 1, low of 50.
So when this project started, there were so many people. My Brett might be a bit of a spiteful vote.
Yeah.
I'm willing to admit that. I'm not as big on him. I think you can tell. But right away, there were so many people that were like, he's my number one. He's the number one, and there's no question about it. And for me, he never once came close to fitting the criteria for a number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I put him – I don't think I buried him or anything. But I think I may have like looked at his negatives a little too closely versus his positives.
Yeah, I think you're probably unfair a little bit. But I also didn't – I never considered him for one. I mean, my one was always locked in, but I didn't even ever put him in – at all in any kind of conversation. I always had him I had my elite and then my sub elite, and he was always like in the middle kind of my sub elite. And for me, the elites, and even though it wasn't fully part of the criteria, I still factored it in, are guys like my top six are guys that carried the company for like at least like a 1 to 2 year stretch or transcended the company. Right. I'd even see my top seven. We'll see when we get to that. Actually top eight even. So, you know, I think you could argue.
Both of our top eights, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. There's one guy in there that I'm not sure really transcended either. But anyway, I was looking at our overall list instead of mine. So anyway, Bret Hart. I don't think he ever had that transcendent run. He was just always
he's not
a B-plus guy because he's better than that. But he was like the king of that tier to me, right? He's like the, you know, he's just the very top of that guys that never took the business to the next level. He had a run. He had his own era, which the guy had below him, we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, I felt was kind of the same. Great worker, checks all the boxes, but never took that leap, which I think the guys above him all took that leap in one way or another.
Yeah. So who else is a B plus? Like, if he's not a B plus, I don't think he's a B plus player, but let's just play along. Like, who is a B plus player? Like, in your mind, who would that be? Like, an Orton? Is Orton a B plus player?
Yeah. I picture my top 23, 24 is all A's.
Okay. Context.
So it's like Slaughter, Warrior on. Like, those are all guys I can see. Like, if you would have put the company around any of these guys, I think they'd be okay, right? And when you dip below, I mean, you could even, you know, I've talked about it. All right, so take Martel out. I think my top 27 outside of Martel could be that. Like, Batista, Jeff Hardy, I think are on the fringe. So, like, those are A's to me.
Right.
Like Christian is a great B plus guy, Valentine, Robert, like guys that are all missing like the one thing to make them able to carry the WWE, WWF.
Right.
And I think Brett is like a notch above that. Like from him down on my list are all guys that like could have been champion, were really good in the role, but would not have been like, you know what I mean? Just icons.
They're not the guy, even though they might have been the guy for a period.
Correct. They're not capital V.
Yeah, right. See, like, for me, there's just a bit too much missing in his game. And I as much as I put him low, I don't know. I don't even know. Because in comparison, like, maybe I'd put him ahead of Angle. I still don't know if I'd put him ahead of Punk. Like, that's still one that I just don't think I can get past based on how good I think Punk is at the same things that Brett is. Like, Brett's a great storyteller in the ring, but Punk was a really good storyteller too. Like, one of the few in the era.
I mean, Brett, I always looked at Punk as the evolutionary Brett. Like, when he was wrestling, like, just doing the multi times a night, you know, like, always kind of the dependable guy. They never felt that they really wanted to strap the ball to him. He always felt like he was just kind of the guy they'd fall back on. You know, like, there was a lot of similarities between the two. The intelligence of the promo. Brett to me, I think Brett's the ultimate, like, you either get it or you don't guy with him, right? I mean, you either are in or you're out. And I could watch his matches a lot. Now, when he phoned it in, they can be boring as shit. But even then, I feel like there's only a couple that really are fucking bad.
But when he phoned it in, though, they were always long.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's on him, though. I mean, he's not demanding 30 minutes and dogging it. I don't know.
No. But it's just fun. It just sucks that it turned out that way.
Right. But, I mean, really, what's his worst? Is that Taker match? I mean, that's...
Backlund at 11 is really
bad.
But
that's not that long.
It's 10 minutes. You're right. The Taker one's long.
And that Diesel Cage is fine. Like, I know that always kind of gets lumped in.
I hate that match. I think it's terrible.
Yeah, but he's fucking cooked at that point. I mean, he had no break for however many years. Like, I can't blame him at that point.
No, I don't blame him, but it still happened. You know, so like...
He also had three other great matches with Diesel, so I'll give him the 3 out of 4. He pulled one out of him at King of the Ring 94 before Diesel really started to put it together.
I'd say that's a solid match. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go great on that one, but that's nitpicking.
It's very, very good. And his other two, I think, are great. Rumble 95, I think, is great. And Survivor 95 is an all-timer.
I think Rumble 95 is, like, bordering on great, and Survivor Series is legitimately great.
Yeah. He's just massive. Like, to me, like, his selling and his connection with the crowd, for a guy that can talk that great.
Yeah.
The connection he had with the young fans. He
couldn't talk that good.
Yeah. Not too good. He was an effective talker, but not... He's never going to remember it as, like, an iconic promo outside of his 97. His 97 stuff's really good. But before that, when you look at that 92, 93, 94, he just had that perfect, you know, underdog, hero of the masses. And that's why he's kind of like Punk too, right? Just kind of the guy that was always overlooked and worked his ass off and earned the respect of the fans. And the fans bought into him because he felt real. And just all those matches to me during that stretch just feel real. Like, that to me, that's his biggest credit point is everything always feels like it makes sense and it is realistic. Like everything he does, the little stuff, stomping on fingers, working the hands, like he does like a lot of little things that to me all add up. And he was the king of that, especially during that stretch where everything he did was just believable. So I think if you were a fan in that stretch and you weren't jaded, a jaded Canadian, like I just think you'd be into Brett. Like if you just grew up as a WWF fan during that stretch, just because of what he meant. Like, and it was, you know, for me as a WWF diehard at age 11, you know, Hogan leaves, Savage, like it's like almost like fuck you guys, you know, like Brett's my guy. Like, you know, he was the guy that stuck around and I didn't need you roided up free. You know, when you're kind of buying the company line at that age, you know, I know some do it now, but at that point when you're really, it's kind of your company, like you feel like a tie to a guy like Brett who stood by and stayed there and fought his ass off and was your champion. And I think that all just speaks to why people had him in contention at one, because he just screamed like pure WWF guy like this. He was around forever. I think some people really like the Hart Foundation run. And you know,
I think the Hart Foundation run is very good.
Yeah. And then even, you know, Chad and I were just talking about on Wrestling Warzone, like how underrated his 95 kind of is too, because I know a lot of people look at the booking and where he was on the card. But if you look at match by match, especially his big ones outside of the Backlund one, like they're all really good. Like, he's got the Hakushi match, the Jean-Pierre Lafitte match.
He's surprisingly good at the Blood Feud match.
Right.
Like he brings an intensity that a lot of guys don't. Like that, if you look at, for instance, like the Lawler match on the first In Your House.
Yep.
He's just kicking the shit out of Lawler.
Right. And he has that great fucking forgotten segment on Raw where he just murders Lawler at the announce table. He just snaps and just fucking beats the shit out of him. And that's a really good match. He's got the two Diesel matches and the Bulldog match as well in 95, which are all just great. I mean, that Bulldog In Your House 5 is just tremendous. And even Lawler, I mean, he's got the SummerSlam 93 stuff, which I know we both love. And then all the Owen stuff. So, I mean, he's just got a ton. I mean, I have no problem saying he's the 10th best guy. Like, to me, it feels good.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I've said some hard things about him and, like, argued against him. But, like, really, I have him at 14.
Right.
So, like, clearly the respect is there. And there was a period of time where Brett was probably my favorite wrestler. Like, it took me a long time to come around to him being a main eventer. I think that's what it was. Maybe it's in how they transitioned the title to him. Maybe I'm not sure what it was, but I don't think I bought him as a main eventer until 94.
Mm-hmm.
But that he'd been a main eventer 2 years almost, right? Like,
yeah, but so, I don't think they positioned him as one. Like, I think you're right, because he wins it and they kind of make it like, oh, he almost won it before he was ready, right? Because he kind of gets plucked for that role. His first set of matches with Sean, who wasn't really established yet, a Survivor Series. And then he fights Ramon, who's not really established, and then he loses to Yoko, and all right, Hogan's back on top. And he almost felt like a guy that – at that point, he did feel like a guy that was just kind of – had fallen into the role. And then he almost like rebuilt. Yeah. His 93 is almost like a normal guy's build to that world title match. Like, he didn't really have that 92. He leaves the IC division and then wins the title.
Right.
And then his 93 is almost like the makeup for that. Like, he wins the King of the Ring. He fights Lawler. He works his way up. And then when he gets crowned in 94, it feels more deserved.
Yeah.
Like, okay, now he's ready to be the guy, you know? So I think your feeling on it is accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I've said a lot of things about Bret Hart. I like Bret Hart. He's probably not my favorite guy. But I'm watching through 95 now, and I'm very excited when I see Bret Hart.
Right.
I'm very happy when he shows up, because it could be a lot worse than 95.
Another guy you should be happy when he shows up in 95 is our number 9. And that is the man I had as high as 7. You had him right at number 9. And that is Shawn Michaels. And even though I have him at 7 and I have him above a guy that I think is iconic, it makes a leap. Shawn is like right on the borderline to me. Like, if Brett's up against the ceiling, like Shawn's like on the ceiling. Like, he is literally, you know, he's not over the borderline. He's on the borderline. He's laying across the border. He is number 6 overall on our cumulative list. High of 1. I mean, on the final list. He was high as a 1 vote and low as a 51 for Sean. Average of 8. So he checks in at number 6. And, I mean, he's got so many matches, both in his original run and his comeback. really doesn't have much bad. I think if you have issue with Sean, you're just not a fan of his style of work. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's it. Because I don't, he doesn't have much bad on his resume once he became like a top guy. So obviously a great promo, great heel or face. I think diminishing returns, obviously, with some of his comeback. But mostly that's when he's... Here we go. Linked with Triple H, right? He's got the DX stuff. And a lot of it's on him, though. Like, I'm not putting it on Triple H solely. Like, he is fucking annoying when in DX. Like, Sean is just as bad.
Yeah.
You know, with the fucking doing the cross chop at his belly button, because, like, that makes a big... That's going to save him from going to hell.
Mr. Fuji! Like, that kind of bullshit.
Right. Just all... He's just so... Like, when is Sean, like, when did DX become, like mentally challenged? Like, that's what I wonder. Like, the original DX was fucking cool and cutting edge, and then it's like Triple H is trying to kind of do, like, the cool dad thing, which was fine, because it's like, it's almost like tongue-in-cheek, like, we get it, we're old, and we're still doing this shit. But yeah. Sean is, like, literally acts, like, dumb. Like, he acts like he got kicked by a fucking horse or something. Like, he's out there just, you know, running in circles and making dumb faces. And, like I don't get when Sean was made to be, like, the moron, you know? So when he's in that DX mode in his comeback, I hated it. But everything else in his comeback outside of DX, I was a fan of.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's when they for no reason shifted who the power was in DX.
Right.
Like, I mean, not that I mean, Triple H had obviously changed and had become a higher up the card wrestler, but, like, now Sean was very subservient. Like, as opposed to, and like the first run, Triple H was very much a lackey for Sean.
Right.
And I bet they believe it's some sort of brilliant coming of age tale. It comes full circle, but it's not. Spoiler alert, it's not.
No, it's like Sean is like, you know, he's like the Alzheimer's grandfather that Triple H brought out of the retirement home to get the band back together. It's, you know, he once was great, you know, but here he is now. But, you know, I mean, peak Sean, like 96, 97, 96 in ring, and then 97 as a character is just like next level. Yeah. I mean, his heel from the, you know, September 97 until, or August of 97 until he gets hurt at WrestleMania is just like, maybe
all
the greatest heel stretch of all time for the company.
He's so good. He's so good. And by the time he walks down the aisle at WrestleMania 14, mm-hmm. he looks the most legitimate I've ever seen him.
Right.
Like, even in all his wounds and everything, he just looks like the top heel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and a dangerous top heel. I don't think his original DX run gets talked about enough as a top heel run. Because he's just so detestable, but so good.
And I think, like, I think a lot of that surrounds, like, him as a person at the time, and then the Hart Foundation kind of falling apart around that time. And I think when people think 97, they think Hart's Austin and U.S. Canada. So I think that part of his run gets overlooked, but his work in the fall. I mean, the one night only match might be the greatest single heel performance of all time in company history.
He's such a prick. Yeah. He's like making faces at Davey's dying sister.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would even say, like, how it transitions from, like, a legitimate fuck up at Survivor Series 97 to give Brett the title
mm-hmm.
to him and Triple H, like, literally trying to murder The Undertaker with chairs.
Right.
It's such a smooth and wonderful transition. And I wouldn't discount how I love that Undertaker Bret Hart. Main event. I think it's
SummerSlam. You said sorry. So it'd be meant SummerSlam.
Oh yeah, I meant the SummerSlam. Yeah,
the SummerSlam.
SummerSlam. but we can't discount how great he is as a guest ref in that match. He is so good, and the way the three of them move together is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, he moves in and out. Taker looks at him a certain way. He jumps back. Then something like it's just this. You would think it was choreographed, but you know it's not.
He's had a couple really good. I mean, he might be one of the best guests. Like. Special refs they've ever had. I mean, you can take or leave however you want to feel about the Hell in a Cell, but the one with Triple H and Taker. But his refereeing there, the one at Judgment Day 2000, he's great in the Iron Man. Like he's had a few with like really, really good referee stints.
Yeah, he's excellent. But he just gets the business, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it always baffles me that, like, Hugh Morris is training guys, but this guy's doing nothing. You know, like it would always, like, I mean, you got the greatest of all time. Like, maybe he doesn't want to, or he's not interested. That's very possible. But, like, he's there. And his in-ring run, really, like you're talking about his peak. Like, I think his peak actually starts in 95.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I meant as a character, but yes, his peak.
Yeah. That Double J match is incredible. And yes. Double J is, you know, I would say Double J is a very good wrestler, but right. like nothing even remotely coming close to that with anybody else, you know? Then you get the ladder match that year. Like, he's fun in wild card match at the yep. Survivor Series. Like,
you get a hint of it at 10, and then when he comes back from a sabbatical is when he really goes next level. Like 10 yeah. is kind of like, hey, I'll be back. Here's what I can do. And then it starts with that really good match with Razor on Raw in his return. And then from there, it's just like ratcheted up. And it just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And then it just like all crests in 97. That stretch his comeback in August of 94 through WrestleMania 14 is like is just all great.
So good. And even without, even if you took, because we haven't even mentioned his Rockers run.
Right.
Which is also exceptional. Yes. But like even if he were to never have come back, he would still be this high.
I think you could take all three runs individually and he makes the list. Like if he just had the Rockers and then leaves in like 93, right? They have the blow off with Marty and he fucks off the WCW. Like he's on the list, right? And then say he never had the Rockers. Say he debuts in 92 as the cocky heel and back dies in 98 and he's out. Like probably top 25, right? At least.
Right.
So now you combine that in the Rockers, like you're saying. So he never comes back again. Yes, he's probably close to where we are right now. And then you yeah. pack on another 8 years. And I know not everyone's a fan of his style, but he's got a lot of really great matches in that stretch.
Well, to the people that aren't a fan of his style, like I think it's fair. You like what you like or whatever. But I think something to look at that I always found fascinating in his comeback is generally when he would come out, he wouldn't get the biggest pop.
Right.
Like, oh, it's Shawn Michaels. He'd get a decent size pop, whatever. But by the end of the match, they're cheering him like he's Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he's won them over completely in that match. So whatever you think of his style, I don't think you can argue that it wasn't effective for eliciting an emotional response from a professional wrestling crowd.
No, it worked. It worked. I mean, Starzers 03 is like a great example. Like, you know, it was like bleeding buckets by the end of that match. Just such a great moment. You got the Taker matches, the Shelton match, that Starzers 03, WrestleMania 20, WrestleMania 21, WrestleMania 22, WrestleMania 23. So you're right. I mean, all those, right?
The Flair match.
Yeah, Flair. So like all that. Like, and all his Mania matches are great in his comeback. And Jericho. You get the Jericho feud in 08. I don't know. Like, the only issue I have with his work during that stretch is the chops. Like, I hate the fucking lazy chops he does, his transition yeah. moves constantly. And I hate the pants. But other than that, like, he just gets so much good stuff. I don't think we need to talk too much more about him. But I think he's earned, to me, like, I had him a touch higher than you. I really went back and forth with him in my number 8. Like, I really had a battle back and forth on that. And I ended up putting him ahead just because I just think he's got more in the ring. But
see, two things on him. Number one, if you had him at number one, he for me was the only non tippy top 1A guy,
right?
Who I could see the argument.
Yeah,
more. Like he's just got such many good things that like people who put it like as opposed to when I heard Brett was number one and it kind of was like I don't know. Like Michaels is like, oh, okay. Like that's not the philosophy I'm approaching it with, but it's still good. And I would go with it. And for me, the reason he is where he is, which is at number 9, is I feel everybody who comes, he's the last one who wasn't an absolute cornerstone of the company.
Yep.
And an absolute like 1A guy.
No, I'm with you.
The thing that I think is interesting about Michaels is I would say almost more so than any other wrestler, and maybe this is a longer debate than we should be having, but is he the guy that has the most dream matches kind of left on the table? That, like,
as a guy that could actually come back and go? Yeah.
Well, what I mean, not even now, but what I mean is that like even yeah. like for like matches that could have happened when he was there, yeah. it just didn't for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like I'm thinking like Eddie Guerrero off the top of my head who were there. I'm thinking Goldberg would have been an awesome match. Maybe they had a quick one. The Rock, Brock Lesnar, You know, there's just, I feel there's a countless, did you ever fight RVD? In a decent,
They fought on Raw, but I don't know if they ever got, a real shot.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah. Even a CM Punk or,
right.
There's just so many guys, he was there and they just didn't take advantage of. When I think of Brett, the only one I can really think of that, they could have jumped on, they didn't, was, which would have been awesome, would have been, Brett Mankind.
Right. And I mean, that speaks more to the roster than the guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's an interesting thing with Sean. It could have been even better.
Right, yes, for sure. All right, our number 8 is an interesting one. So I had him at 10, you had him at 7. Because to me, he's actually closer to the Brett category than above. And because, yes, he had a long run, he was the top guy. But I feel like I never picture him being in that top all-time. He's right on the cusp of being that, icons list. I think he's very comparable to Brett, and even if you want to put him with Punk eventually, too. As a guy who held the company, steadied the ship, was a great champion, but never, icon. And that's Bob Backlund. And I'm love Bob. But to me, he never took that transcendent step to carry the company and be the face. He carried it, but we just had the conversation with Brett. He was never a crossover star. And for me, everyone else above him, him and Brett were kind of crossover level, with Sean probably being the lowest. But from then on, it's all tip-top guys. I do love his heel return. I think it pads out a lot of his career. He's got a couple of great matches, and the character is just next level. The Brett matches being the best. But why did you have Backlund ahead of a couple of guys you had him above?
When I was doing research for this project, I mentioned, I'm sure, countless times that I watched as many house shows, as many specials as I could. And no one impressed me more in that run than Bob Backlund. I couldn't believe how good the matches were, how over he was. They're screaming for him. In some instances, to the same level as they're screaming for Bruno, earlier, And so I don't know if I could consider him the same kind of 1B guy like Bret Hart. 1B is a good description of Bret Hart, I'd say, as Bret Hart, because he didn't carry the company for a year or two. He carried it for 6 years, right? Now, he had help. Bruno was still around a little bit. There was a lot going on, right? But if you watch it, the pops are not dissipating. The feuds are always hot. And he's just excellent. Do I particularly like his character? It's a bit bland for me, but it worked for the time period. So
But I think Brett worked for his time period too.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree that Brett's worked for his time period. If I were to compare Brett to Punk, I think Punk is more dynamic in most ways, right? So that's what puts him a little bit ahead, right? Bob Backlund just, to me, feels more iconic than a Bret Hart, because, he just felt more big time in those matches for me. And I think Bret Hart's top matches are probably better than Bob Backlund's top matches. Right. I would give Brett the edge there. I don't know if Brett's connection to the crowd is as strong as Backlund's. I don't know. That's kind of a hard thing to measure anyway. But I think for someone who carried the company as long as he did, there was something special about him. And I don't know how much you went back and watched his stuff, but every time, every match, I remember the first time he was coming out, I was expecting I don't know, I don't really give a shit about Backlund. Wow, it was great. And then the next feud was great. And then he's feuding against guys that I really don't care about. And the matches are great. There are some stinkers too, everybody else. But Bob Backlund for me is the worst of the company torchbearers.
Right.
But he is a torchbearer.
But he's not a crossover for me. The next guys up are...
What do you mean by crossover? Are you talking about
this icon. Guys I feel if you name anyone on this list above Brett, right? And I have Backlund and Brett. I pretty much had them tied, just about.
Yeah.
Anyone, you walk on the street and almost anyone would, I think, would know these names. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Yes.
Anyone who's aware of wrestling on any level, I don't think you know Bob Backlund, though. You know what I mean?
No, I can get it. I get what you're saying. And I think in the end, that's why I have him Actually, I don't have him as the worst company ever. I have the second to worst, but there's reasons for that. Yeah. But I have him towards the back of that because you're right. There is a he's not Bruno. He's not Hogan. Like,
right. He's not the big guns. He's not the big guns. And, you know, looking at it, I may have my 7 and 8 flipped, which we'll talk about in a second. If that's my criteria, you know what I mean? But I do think Sean was like the closest of this bunch to like the you know, kind of almost being like a mainstream name.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, look, what's bigger, Sean on Baywatch or Brett on Lonesome Dove? Ah, but then you get Brett on The Simpsons.
But you get Sean on Pacific Blue.
Right. So Sean, obviously.
You get Foley on G versus E.
You're right.
All right.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
All right, let's do our number 7 because this was one of the most divisive guys on the list. And by the way, Backlund finished at 19. He had a high of 3, low of 75. So I think that's kind of low for Bob. All right, this next guy, though, very divisive. We have them both real high. He actually finished at 49 overall. High of 2, low of 98. He was on 73 ballots, so he was off a lot of ballots. And that's the boss, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I had him at 8. You had him at 6. I had him as high as 5 on my original list. And
Me too.
I moved him down behind a couple, and then him and Sean, like almost right down to the day I submitted my list, I was back and forth on them. And I think Sean, I think the two greatest heel stretches in company history are Sean's 97 into 98 and Vince's 98 into 99. Like that is, and even if you want to give diminishing returns as Vince goes along, like, you know, his initial real run is through Fully Loaded, but I'll give you, you know, from WrestleMania 14 through WrestleMania 15, right? Or even through Valentine's Day Massacre, you could, the nominal end of his initial run. So they kind of equal out there, and Vince has great matches, but Sean's just got more. He's got the, you know, he's got all this. So that's why I ended up putting him ahead. But I do put Vince in that transcendent category. Like on that alone, he'd be ahead of Sean because of who he is. And I know there's a lot of argument and a lot of discussion around whether you should rank Vince. Is it fair? But when you look at his catalog, like he had a good number of matches. Like it wasn't like he had wrestled 4 times. I mean, yes, and yes, he's the owner. He could put himself in these matches, but you know what? He always showed ass. He put guys over. Yeah, he worked his ass off. He wasn't just out there as like whatever, you know, like fucking Vince Russo schlepping himself out there doing nothing in matches on Nitro. I mean, Vince
jumping
is out
off
there.
Cages.
Huh?
He's jumping off cages.
Right, he's doing crazy shit. He's working his butt off, and he's just a tremendous heel character. I mean, he's probably the best heel the company's ever seen. During that run, watch the heat during that stuff is just off the fucking charts. And as great as Austin was, we saw what his peak was pre-Vince, and it was probably US Canada, which was damn good. But Vince took him next level. And I don't know if he gets that next level without Vince.
There's no way he does.
And you can argue that Vince has been diminishing returns year over year, but I think some of the stuff in the moment that folks were sick of, if you were to go back and like rewatch it, like I think it holds up better. Like in the moment, I was like, "Oh, I'm so sick of the McMahons. Vince has to go away." But when you go back and rewatch a lot of his stuff, like it all holds up pretty well. Like when you're not living it week to week, like even his 03 shit, like fucking torturing Zach Gowen and beating the shit out of him in that match.
I love that. And he bleeds like a motherfucker in that match.
He bleeds like the motherfucker in everything in 03. Like the Hogan match at 19, he's gushing blood. Undertaker is fucking disgusting. He's buried in dirt with fucking blood all over him. His 03 is like damn fucking strong. You know, that's probably
it's
his second best
Stephanie.
Year.
Just the Stephanie match.
Right. That's the only dog shit. It's not even that bad. It's just because of what it is. But
it's just a horrible idea.
Right. It was a bad idea, but the match itself, like if you put it in a vacuum, is okay.
I'm going to beat my daughter.
And then, like, 05, you know, he's hurt. And then even 06, like, he's the one shining light through a lot of the DX stuff. And I love I fucking love, at the end of 05, to start the whole fucking Brett Sean DX stuff. He comes out, and they had just released a Brett DVD. And he's like, you know, we celebrated it. And Sean comes out to the ring. He's like, oh, here he is, my partner in crime. Like, he thinks, like, Sean's coming out to celebrate with him. And then Sean is like, you know, is like, I'm over it, get over it. And that starts the feud. But I love that moment. Oh, it's so good. He's got so many just great promos, too. He's, you know, maybe the best talker they've had I think he's the best heel, and his hit rate in big matches, they all score.
I will watch the segment where Undertaker and Kane break his leg like once a month. Like, it's just so good.
I mean, his 90 is like flawless. Oh, he's so flawless through all of that.
Yeah. Don't let him in here. He's driving a cement truck.
Like, just all that shit is this next level. When he gets arrested, you know, and he's in cuffs the whole episode. His hair's all mussed up from the beer. Like that whole, you know, the whole one where Austin has him arrested.
And I assaulted Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I got away with it. Kind of a maniac. That's
him in the fucking limo with the belt after he screws them. You know, he drives off.
And he can't give the middle finger properly.
Right. It's all kind of crooked.
He's got that index all bent and the thumb out.
Him in the wheelchair in late 98 is awesome.
And then when he starts running, when he gets out of it and runs.
Oh, yeah. And then, yeah, WrestleMania, I mean, Judgment Day 2000 does a duck walk with Taker is like a great moment. And his match.
Every big with him bloody the finger, either from a stretcher or right. leaning against the Big Show.
So much good stuff. All those matches connect just about. Like, he hasn't had many bad ones at all. And they always mean something, and he always puts the guy over in the end. Like, always, you know, when it matters. Like I can't think of one match where he won that he shouldn't have won.
Yeah, I mean, even Zach Gowen, he should have beaten him.
Right, exactly. Yes, he should have won that. I can't think of any other where he... I mean, I may be blanking on one or two, but I don't think so. I
can't think of many matches he's won.
Right. I even love the King of the Ring 99 with him and when he has Shane on his shoulders trying to get the fucking briefcase. And that might be one of his worst matches, but I mean, it's still fun.
Yeah, I mean, he's you can't. His matches are always good because he's maybe probably the best character they've ever had.
Right.
And so and he brings it to the matches. Like he's screaming. Like if you watch that Royal Rumble when Austin finally gets him in 99, when he finally gets to fight him. Austin's stomping him and he's just screaming and not comical like Norman Smiley screaming. Like,
right.
Like he's being murdered by Steve Austin.
And the build to the Rumble's like next level. All the training videos with Shane and everything.
I hate Austin.
All that stuff. I mean, it's just, yeah. So, I mean, I don't get the argument to leave him off. If you feel like I think one of the arguments was, oh, he took a spot from wrestlers but you know what?
He was better than
most of them. He wasn't just out there eating up time and space. I mean, he's actually putting guys over and making things count. Like, I have no issue putting him on a list. And if you put him on a list, to me, he's got to be high. I don't know how you can justify just sticking him in, like, the 70s or some shit. You know what I mean?
No, me either. Because, like, I mean, is it even debatable that he's, like, a top? I mean, I think he's the best heel ever, but is it debatable he's a top five heel?
No, unless you just don't like him as a person. I mean, that's it. Like, if you just can't justify putting him on the list. But he he is maybe their best heel of all time. And his matches all deliver. He can talk. He's fine as a face. He's next level amazing as a heel.
The promo he cuts before Judgment Day – is it Judgment Day? Judgment Day 98 when he's in the wheelchair with the dogs.
Yes.
Is – maybe my favorite heel promo of all time.
And then even has the one in 2000, the famous Life Sucks and Then You Die one.
Oh, yeah. but even like the one with the dogs, like he mixes in the comedy.
Right.
Like, you violated me! Yeah, Life Sucks is great too. Like, look, he's an all-time character. His matches always over-deliver.
Right.
I don't think there's one that's ever under-delivered. I mean, you could say the expectations are low.
You could maybe see the one he shouldn't have won was maybe when he wins the title over Triple H. But even that's a great moment when he comes back to save Linda. You son of a bitch! When he comes out of banishment.
And even then, like, it's not like he beat up Triple H.
Right. It's just a fluke win. Yeah.
Yeah. And Triple H got it right back. And did it hurt? Did it end up hurting Triple H? Triple H wasn't even really over at that point anyway. So.
Okay. Well, I think we made our points on Vince. Yeah, I think you have to have him and he has to be high. That's just my feeling. That was the one guy I really disagreed with where he finished overall. I was glad he at least made the list. You know, like, I knew he'd make the list, but I was glad he made, like, the top 50 at least. But I think people were irrational on him. That's just my feeling. Like, they just, they were not listening when we talked about Vince.
Right.
That's how I feel. All right. So I think this is really the last guy we have some kind of disagreement on. Like, I think everyone else were either tied or one off. But our next guy, I had at 5, you had at 8, and that is John Cena. So I have him here because, again, I do think he transcends, especially now. Like, I do think he's a next level guy. I do think if you say John Cena's name, most people know him. I think he's the modern day version of all the guys ahead of him where I have him. It was tough putting him ahead of The Rock, which I do have.
And wrong.
By one. Yeah, maybe. But I do think if this is pre-15, he probably doesn't go ahead of The Rock, but his stuff in 15, the way he turned the corner into like being the greatest indie super match worker of all time.
Right.
like to me that bumped him up. Over The Rock. Because The Rock, volume is an issue for The Rock. Like, it's a sneaky issue, but it's an issue. And Cena, when you look at the stuff he's done in 15, 16, 17, is just so good. Like, the AJ Styles matches. I love Rock, but he just doesn't have the matches. He doesn't have the, like, if you look at Cena's resume, like, the Umaga matches, the AJ Styles matches, the first Owens match, that is really damn good. And then him and Rock have a great match, but, you know, they're in it together. WrestleMania 28.
Yeah.
The Lesnar match. So much, yeah. You know, so the Bryan match.
Bryan.
Right. I mean, like, Cena has all those. And Rock, I don't know if he, you know, I don't know what he has for 5-star matches, but, and I'm not a fan of, you know, me. I'm a tick lower in 17. So,
yeah.
You know, and it depends how you feel about Judgment Day 2000. So, like, Cena, with that extra volume comes a lot of junk, right? Like, we've talked about throughout this whole project. And I think Rock at his core is a better promo, but you know what? He relies on the catchphrase stuff too. Like, I think Cena, when Cena wants to do the serious leveled detail promo, like, they both can do it. And I think Cena can do it. I think Cena actually outclassed him at times when they were doing the face to face in the build up to their matches. And I don't think the early work of Cena can be slept on either. Like, his heel rapping and stuff was real good. On some of those early feuds, and he's got good stuff in there too. He's got the Batista match in 08, the Lashley match even. Like, he's got a lot of damn good stuff. Like, I just don't think Rock can match the volume of his catalog.
Yeah, does Rock even have a 5-star match is the question. Some people would say 17. I wouldn't.
Right, I think that's it. I mean, outside of that, I think he's got a bunch in the 4 to 4.5, like Brock at SummerSlam 02, I think the Cena match, was the other one I just mentioned a minute ago. Judgment Day 2000 is up there. Backlash 2000 is up there. Like, I think he's got a lot.
One of the Jericho matches maybe from.
Right. Yeah, I think he's got a lot sniffing it, but I don't think he cracked it. And I Cena's got at least, what, 5? I mean, he's got the Umaga match. I'd have it 5 stars. The Rumble 15 3-way, I'd have 5 stars. AJ, yeah. How many of those has he had? I've lost count.
I don't think I have any of those at 5, but they're like 4.75. But
right. And then Bryan is 5, right?
Yeah, Brian is 5, Punk is 5.
Yeah, so there you go. That's at least 4.
Yeah. Did we say Lesnar?
No, there's another one.
That's 5. At least the first one is.
Yeah.
Look, my argument with Cena was never will never, ever, ever be that he doesn't have a catalog of great matches. And I mean, are we just on? We're just comparing Rock and Cena at this point, really, right? Like,
yeah, because that's our biggest. Well, you had Cena below Backlund and Vince as well.
Yeah, because I believe that Cena I don't know if we talked about this at some point, but I believe that Cena hurts the business in a way that Backlund and Vince don't.
Hmm.
And when I say hurts, let's take it in context, right? Like, I don't think he's tanking the business or anything. I'm not saying he's Triple H, you know, but
you are.
He is Cena H. I think that his character, he's the last top face that they've pushed that the audience chose, which I think is interesting.
Right.
The audience really did choose him. But it feels like when they did decide to push him, they forgot what made him popular.
Yeah.
And they made him into something else. And I think his character from I'm going to say late 05 – I mean, even to this day, to a certain degree, his character is one of the things that I think really hurts the presentation for me. the never being affected by anything.
Yeah.
The never being affected by anything is a big thing, because I think that's all drama. Like, all drama rests on, like, character going for objectives, right? And if they don't achieve their objectives, that's what makes them interesting, because they have to work harder to get them. But if you're never affected by anything, you're not an interesting character.
Right. He's like the worst improv guy ever, who just...
Oh, God. Stephanie's one, but he's like 1B.
Right. But he's like the main rule of improv, right, is that you play off what the other guy gives you, right?
And he's like Michael Scott in an improv.
Yes, exactly. He just completely disregards the setup of the story and just does his own thing.
Well, I lost.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of that.
But I don't know. It happens with a lot of this stuff. Like, how much is him and how much is, like, them saying, like, because that era is very much the era of, and we're still in it, where shit doesn't carry or matter, right? It's just like, on to the next one. And I say this all the time when everyone gets upset that someone's getting buried or booked wrong. It's like, they book show to show and that's it. If they want to heat a guy up, they'll heat him up. So it makes me wonder how much is he's just directed to go out there and be Super Cena. Because I feel like he's got too much respect for everyone, and you don't hear too much bad about him. And I don't know. I just feel like he's got too much respect for the business, everyone, to go out and just bury shit like that on his own. That's just my take.
No, I don't think he's burying it on his own, but that doesn't necessarily make him an effective character, though. Mm. And if I may about that, I had a point, but I lost it now. I think he's the beginning of that trend.
Yeah.
The trend that supersedes the company now. And you're right. They can heat someone up whenever they want. And what you're saying is a valid point. But there's the counter side to that, too, is that, like, that no one's ever really as hot as they are at their peak.
Right. I'm not saying it's effective.
Yeah. But that's just anyway. It. Like, that, to me, when I complain about that, it's never from a perspective of like, I think what we're getting is shit. Right. I think what we're getting is not as brilliant or as good as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's the beginning of that. And now it's a company-wide phenomenon because of him. So the idea being that his character for me hurts the business. And I'm curious, because he actually turned me off the business for a good 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was just tired of him. Like, it's not that I hated him, I was just tired of seeing him. You know, like, and I'm curious as to how many other people are in that boat where he pushed them away for that period. And I don't know if the other guys that I have ahead of him pushed people away to that degree.
Yeah, I think he's a good comp with The Rock, too, because I look at them both, and, you know, I think the aw shucks stuff, I don't pin that on him, but, like, him and Rock, as far as being the true selfless guys you always hear about, like, just, you know, I mean, no two top guys have ever laid down for more people than they have.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I think that's a credit to Cena, too, is, I mean, even over the last year, like, how many top, can you imagine Hulk Hogan getting slaughtered by The Undertaker in WrestleMania like that? You know what I mean? Like the stuff he does like that. And his 17 was strong for me, too, because I really liked The Miz feud a lot, and I thought he really opened himself up and exposed, like, his, he clearly has issues with his personal life and his marriage, like, engagement and all that. Like, I mean, clearly, right? It's like clearly an issue for him. So well, for him to expose all that.
Nikki Bella is a goddess.
Yes, of course.
So why would he
have
issues?
He's a moron. But he clearly has issues with it. And for him to open himself up and make that, like, fair game for Miz to attack and for them not to hate each other like Sean and Brett did, like, to me, that speaks a lot for him as, like, a selfless professional wrestler. Like, he could have said, look, I am not making this a fucking, like, I have enough issues right now. You already got me on fucking E, you know, doing this shit. And now you want to make this, you know, you want Miz to basically call out what's wrong with my relationship on, you know, national TV week after week. And he did it. And Cena passes the sniff test for me, too, as far as, like, being known. Like, yeah, sure. I was at a wedding the other night, you know, and I forgot. I remember how it even came up. My sister's like, oh, is, you know, Cena, Nikki Bella back together? Like, all of a sudden, like, three or four people are talking about it. And outside of wrestling. Like, then it's not even wrestling. Like, they're just talking about him as, like, a celebrity couple. You know, so it's like he checks that transcendent box for me. And you know, him and Rock. If I had ties on this list, I had Bret and Backlund were basically tied. Vince and Shawn are basically tied. And Cena and Rock were basically tied. So I had to start nitpicking. And for me, like, the nitpick was just that Cena had more big matches. Like, that's, you know, that's it for all six of those guys. Like, they were all just one nudging out the other.
And for me, like, I mean, like, look, I have him at 8, right? So it's not like, obviously, I'm agreeing with you on the transcendentness and all that business, right? But for me, it's just a question of a few too many holes in his game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is character. But I find a lot of it is ring work, too. Like, for me, he has a bunch of, like, he has a bunch of 4 3/4 star matches for me that, like, would be fives if he didn't do this one fucking stupid thing in the match.
Right. But all right, so can we get into The Rock then? Because I feel like there's some comps here. Yeah. So Rock is number 5. So hang on, let's level set. So Cena finished at 4 on the overall list. High of 1, low of 87.
87?
Yes. The Rock finished at number 1 with a low of 95. I'm finished at number 7, high of number 1, lower 95, which is absurd. I wonder if that's Glenn Butler, though, which is very possible.
How many ballots are they both on?
Cena was on. Hang on. Cena was on 117 out of 118. Rock was on 116.
It's like, who are these? Who's leaving these two off?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not a real question. Don't look it up. We don't need the dead air time.
So Rock, to me, Rock has some holes too, right? I do think he has some holes in his game. I think his offense can be soft at times. I think he can be over dramatic in his selling and like playing to the last person in the crowd. Like the sharpshooter is a major fucking annoyance for me. Like, and he leans on it and you can't discount it as just a move because he leans on it in like every big match. And it's a big part of why it's a big part why I can't get into the 17 match all the way. Like it's such a big part of that match and I fucking hate it. And he sucks.
I would counter that too with the STF is often fucking awful from Cena.
Sure, but this is why I'm saying like the comparable. Right?
I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah.
Right, like I think Rock has I think Rock is held up as this paragon of like flawlessness, but I don't think so. I also think Cena got it quicker than Rock did. Like I think it took Rock longer. Like his 96 and 97 is shakier than Cena's first year. You know what I mean? Just overall presentation.
I think I would agree with you as a character. I don't know if I'd agree in ring, but go on.
What did he do in ring, Rock? From his debut through late 97.
It's not that he had like a it's not that he had any tremendous matches. I don't think Cena did either. But I think he was very smooth in the ring. He moved well. He strung moves together well. I don't know if Cena had that as well. And I also think Cena had a lot more – I could be wrong, but was he in developmental longer than Rock? That's also possible too, right?
Maybe. I mean Rock also worked at USWA and stuff. He also had a pedigree.
Right.
But again, I just think Cena's early work is a little bit stronger than Rock's like early work. Because even when Rock clicks as a character in late 97, like it's not really until early-ish, like the Shamrock feud when he starts really kind of getting it going in the ring. And even as a character, it doesn't really fully click until the Rock thinks you should take the belt or whatever the fuck it is, you know. And that's late. That's like December.
97,
like his first few months as a heel, like he's getting his feet wet and he's solid. But it's really not till then. So his peak is really, you know, 98, 99, 2000. And then he leaves, you know, 01, he's spotty. And 02, he's spotty.
03 is amazing.
Oh, he's awesome. I mean, and this is not to discredit him at all. Like, he's one of my all-time favorites. And he's even really good in 04. What is nitpicking? I just think Cena's volume. I think they both have holes in their game is what I'm trying to say. I think Rock can lean way too heavy on the comedy stuff. He's great when he wants to be, but I think he's just as bad as Cena as trying to get over you know, Whisker Biscuit and all, you know, like you're an asshole, like all that. So, like he has just as many misses as hits on his catch races and stuff to get over. Great talker though. Unflappable, crowd in the palm of his hand. The Hogan match at 18 is just like an amazing piece of professional wrestling. And then I love
that's his fight. That's his 5-star match.
Correct. Yes. Yep. There it is. And his build to Brock at SummerSlam 02 is amazing. The real sports build he does and all that. And that match, passing the torch in that match is great. His character in 03 is really good. I love the 19 match, but that's really all. I mean, the Goldberg match is, you know, whatever. And then the Hogan match. No Way Out was awful. It's brutal. But 19 is actually my favorite match with him and Austin. I have like that and 17 kind of even, and I like 19 better.
Yeah, I have them very close too.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I love WrestleMania 19 more than most, so.
Yeah, 17's just this stuff missing in that match, and it's not the heel turn. Yeah. I just can't, it just doesn't click fully with me. And that fucking sharpshooter is part of it. So anyway, Rock and Cena, I was back and forth on a ton. They're super close for me, but I just think Cena's got just a bit more volume, just like I thought Sean had more volume than Vince, and Brett had more. I don't know if he's got more volume than Bob. He probably does, but more connection to me than Bob. So like, that's kind of, those six were all like real tight in pairings, and I just nudged each one higher based on kind of volume to me.
Yeah, those, I mean, that's fair. Like, it's fair. And look, like, when we get to the top, when we get to even the top 10, like, I mean, you really are nitpicking and, right, like, looking at the minutia. So, like, I mean, in the end, we have these guys within three spots of each other, right? So,
right,
obviously, the respect and admiration for them as professionals is there.
And I could have had Brett. I could see the argument for Brett one. I would never put him one. But from Vince on, I could have, like, I could have talked myself into any of those guys as number one, including Vince.
Yeah.
At any point. Like, I could have easily talked myself into Vince, Sean, Rock, Cena, and then the guys we're going to get to. All as cases, strong cases for number one. And I wouldn't begrudge anyone trying to argue Brett as number one.
No, I didn't begrudge it. I just...
No, I know you were. I'm agreeing with you, because I know you said that earlier. Yeah. So,
okay, good.
To me, those are the guys, like, I would have been fine with. But eight, one through eight on my list, I could have personally tried to make a case for them to be number one. All right, why don't we get to our top four, which are all the same. We mirrored each other on all of these. So we're not going to have much disagreement. We can probably just touch on them kind of quick and then wrap up. So my number four and your number four is Bruno Sammartino. Again, a guy I could see the case for number one. I think this is, you know, one of the rare times for me where the personal connection card came into play. Like, I just wasn't around for the peak of his work, and I get it. I do think the three above him are a bit more versatile, but he didn't have to be versatile. Like, he shouldn't have been versatile. He was just Bruto and just dominated. It's just, you know, it's a different era. He finished number eight, actually, with a high of one, a low of 76. I don't know the fuck had Bruno 76, but
someone who didn't give a fuck.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what world you can have Bruno Sammartino number six. 76.
Just keep him off the list. Don't put him on the list then.
Right. Yeah. You're better off just, I mean,
God, I'm champion for a goddamn decade.
Whoever it is, we got to shame them. So I'm going to try and find who it was. Like, I almost feel like it had to be someone that, like, didn't really understand the fucking rules, right?
It better not be El Groino after all the things I said about him earlier.
What number did I say was 76?
Yeah.
All right. I'll find it.
Yeah. Because we got to really tear into this person.
Ian Goldsworthy. He had Backlund 75.
Wow. So he just hates the 70s and 60s.
He's Bailey at 67. Jim Neidhart at 65.
No, come on.
Bray Wyatt at 61.
Did we ever talk about Bray Wyatt? He's just the fucking dirt worst, isn't
Samoa
he?
Joe at 55. Chavo fucking Guerrero at 50. Devon at 41.
I'm longing for the days of, you know what? At least Devon, he's got 5-star matches.
Cena at 34. Daniel Bryan at 33. Piper at 32. Andre at 30. One. At 29, I mean. He had Flair high, 24. He had Wade Barrett at 21. Kane at 20. Triple H at 13. And Mick Foley at 1. Taker at 2.
I would like to hear the Ian, I would like to hear the argument for Wade Barrett at 21.
Given based on his name, I'm assuming I think he went with his favorites if you look at this list. If you know, you could probably assume his age and based on locale. He's got British Bulldog high.
Right, but
Barrett high.
Wade Barrett accomplished absolutely
no,
zero.
No, I know. I think it's probably just ranked his favorites. That's my guess. That's all.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
I think some of this. I think some of these ones we've seen funkiness is probably just
right.
Their favorite.
100. And that's fine. Like, you know what? Like, we're kind of like having fun with these lists, right. But like, everyone who participated is awesome.
Oh yeah,
it
for
takes
sure.
Time to fill this in, and I hope no one's alienated by this because it really is.
No, we appreciate
just,
all the
like,
hard
good
work.
Good natured.
Yeah, it's just some ribbing, but it's asshole except, you know, like, except for Nate and Scott. But no, anyone who took the time to do the list and put the work in. I mean. Again, we appreciate it, and we hope you do the tag list because it's a lot of fun. Hope you learn some stuff. All right, anything else you want to say about Bruno? I mean, we didn't say much, but
no. Do we need to say anything? Like, I'm on board for the same reasons. I was impressed with how over he was when I went back and watched stuff.
Right.
And I didn't love the matches, but I would never argue they weren't effective. So, for me, the three ahead of him are just
right,
just way more iconic and
yeah,
I think, are in my wheelhouse.
I always had Bruno at four. These next three are the ones that, to me, had the true case for one. Like I said, you can make the case from Bruno down, but these are the three, to me, that had the legit claim to number one. Like, these are, you know, the three. Two of them are kind of icons of an era.
I'll be honest. These are the only three I considered for number one.
Right. Me too. Me too. All right. Number three is Steve Austin. And again, I think he has a legitimate case. I think, to me, he doesn't have the longevity of the other two, as far as his peak goes, right? I mean, his true peak is what, 97 to 01?
01?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's barely around in 02, and then 03 is just there for 2 months. And
yeah, and that's it.
Now, Steve Austin, before we even talk about him, okay, where did he finish and how many points behind the person in front of him?
He finished at two.
And how many points behind?
17. He was off two ballots.
See, he should be number one. He should have won this. And when I look at this list, this is actually one of the things that kind of, like, it doesn't sour me on the project because I love the project and it was fun. But it doesn't feel right that he didn't win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he would be on your list, because the way the thing was weighed, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if anybody actually knows about how it was weighed, but, like, you know, if he would have just finished top 50 on those two lists, he would have won the thing easily.
And he had the highest low vote at 20. High of one, low of 20. So no one finished, you know, of all the low votes, he was the highest.
Yeah, so, like, I don't want to say it hurts the legitimacy of the project, but there's something off. Like, are we guessing he was left off ballots because of the personal stuff?
Yeah, I think the morality clause probably left him off for a couple of ballots. That's my guess.
And it's funny because, like, we talked at length about the morality stuff, and, like, I mean, he's always been, to me, the personification of the WWE's hypocrisy and the morality stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, not that, like, I don't want to get into a whole Hulk Hogan and what he said and whatnot, but, like, you know, someone like him is like forbidden, but Steve Austin beat the shit out of his wife.
I think it's a time thing, right? I mean, if Austin that happened now, he's gone, right? I mean, it happened during a time where they weren't, that focus wasn't so high in the world overall, social media, like, just there wasn't that much social justice out there.
Sure, but a company that, like, it uses excuses like, well, my kids can't look this person up on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's there. Like, you'll find it right away.
Yeah. But, you're right. There's a ton of hypocrisy for sure. So I'm guessing there's just people that didn't want to rank him because they felt gross to do so. I mean, Hogan is only on 115 ballots. You know, from what I can tell, there's only a few guys. Undertaker, Shawn, Bret, Savage. I think that's it. It was on every single ballot.
Right.
And,
so,
Steve, Flair.
Sorry about that.
Flair is actually on every ballot, too.
Flair's on every ballot. Yeah, that's so fucking weird. So back to Austin. Sorry to sidetrack, but I just think that's a really kind of interesting thing about the whole project.
No, I agree.
So
agree.
If you ever think that your vote doesn't count.
Right. It definitely affected this. I mean, you're right. I mean, anywhere – you know, if you rank him, he's probably not below 50. He would have been number one. So, and should he be number one? Because I don't know if Hogan would have made those other three. Hogan missed by under 100. Oh, I'm sorry. No, he missed by almost 200. So he would have probably needed a couple number ones.
Might not have made it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But I mean, Hogan, I mean, we'll get to Hogan. Let's talk about Austin.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
unless you want to compare them, because
no, I mean, I had them. All right, let's just talk. We had Hogan 2 and Savage 1, so let's just get that out there. We can talk about all three. Okay, so sorry to make it anticlimactic.
Yeah,
Randy Savage was both our number one. We can cover that. I think we talked about him in depth on one of the making the cuts.
But I have a problem with it now, and we're going to talk about that later.
All right, so why is Austin above Hogan for you, or why is Hogan above Austin? I mean,
Hogan's the biggest wrestling star of all time. Like, without Hogan, there is no Steve Austin. There's probably no WWF to the degree it is. I think they're very equal in a lot of things. Like, I mean, is one really a better promo than the other? They're so different. It's really hard to compare them. But I would say they're both extremely good talkers. I would say Austin got more over with his talking, but I mean, Hogan in his promos was fantastic. Character wise, they're both complete personifications of the time period where they were wrestling. Like Austin, the anti-hero, Hogan, the all-American guy. I don't know. All-American human being. And I mean, I think Austin's probably a slightly better worker than Hogan. Slightly might not be the right word. He's probably a better worker than Hogan, but Hogan gets shit on as a worker. But I think he's tremendous. I mean, his pre-87 stuff is criminally underrated with how good he is in those matches. And then all of his big matches, like, I mean, I had this argument at length a while back. Like, I mean, you're not going to convince me that Hogan Andre at WrestleMania 3 isn't a 5-star match. Mm-hmm. Like it's too effective and too perfect for me to argue it. While Hogan's not doing moonsaults, like the crowd is gasping at every single movement he does. And in the end, that's what professional wrestling is. Mm-hmm. They both have low points, you know, they both kind of like, I mean, their low points, I wouldn't say their low points are crazy low. I would say Hogan's are probably a little lower than Austin's. Lower, I mean, what is Hogan's low point? The Money Inc. thing at WrestleMania 9.
Right.
I don't know. That might even be it.
Yeah, to like, take your shit at the end of 91, maybe.
Yeah, but even that, there was something interesting and exciting about it.
The match well, Flair. Good. I mean, Flair. Flair's exciting.
But even the idea of Hogan fighting this Undertaker and this Undertaker beating him, you know, like this new guy, like there's something interesting there. Like Austin's bad stuff dips down. I mean, I wouldn't say it's total garbage, but it's not great. So for me, it just they're super close, and it felt like Hogan edges him out by mere star power and importance.
Yeah, and I think Hogan's has got more volume too. I mean, we just talked about how short Austin's run is. Like Hogan's got the blip in 80, and then he's got 83 to 93. That's 10 years. And then his comeback is smattered throughout, what, 02 to 06?
Yeah.
You know, so that's another four. So even if you condense that down to, say, it's a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, so he's still got 12 years, right? I mean, and his comeback stuff is good. Like, there's some shit there, but there's some good stuff too. I mean, he's got the Rock match, like we mentioned. He's got the Vince match, which is great. The Shawn match. You know, like there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just, he's just wrestling. Like, he's just WWF to me. He's just slightly ahead of Austin. I mean, he just is. Like, he is just what they built around. He was an icon. Watching a lot of those MSGs and stuff, like, has really, again, helped for me during this voting period as well. A lot of those matches are just so damn good that he has throughout that stretch.
Yeah.
He was just a phenomenon. And the pops are insane. And Austin is too. I mean, he gets a ton too. And, you know, not to modulate, they're really close. They're splitting hairs. Hogan had a high of one, a low of 100. So, again, he's hurt 100. You know, the people, again, the morality stuff with him. Him and Austin are both hurt by that. So I think if they're both on all the ballots, all things equal, they're probably both ahead of our number one. Who was Randy Savage? So talk to us about what your qualms are now, your regrets.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but as we were getting closer to the date, we talked about this where I was like, I don't know if I can put Savage number one, like ahead of Hogan. Like I think Savage is the best all around professional wrestler there's ever been, like as on a whole. And what I used to justify his placement ahead of Hogan was the fact that he probably still is the best wrestler I've ever seen at eliciting an emotional response from the crowd.
Right.
And I don't mean like like Hogan elicits an emotional response, right? But Savage, like you
– it feels more real.
Yeah, there's a rawness to it. There's a realness. Like you might cry.
And that really shines. It doesn't count for this, but it really shines in WCW. Like the stuff Chad and I are watching now in 95, like Savage just feels so real and Hogan feels like a fucking cartoon.
Yeah. He's just a real I think he's so good at that. And there's few guys that are – that even touch that. Like I would put like modern guys like maybe the NXT version of Sami Zayn, but it's not even close. Maybe Johnny Gargano. Like, but even him, it's not mm-hmm. the same. Like, there's
no. I think Daniel Bryan is the closest.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan. You're right. So I think he's awesome at that. But I think I weighed that too heavily because I really based my top eight on the 1A guys, and the more I think about it, and the more I thought about it. I don't know if Savage fits in that group.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does fit in the group, he's on the borderline of it. So I don't know. Like, I have a lot of thoughts on it. You know, like,
right.
If I had to do it over today, I might still vote him number one because I might still convince myself of that argument. But, like, talking about it now, I feel like Austin and Hogan should be ahead of him. Like, just in terms of they're the biggest and most successful stars ever. And success doesn't necessarily always equate better, but their runs are also incredible. Like,
see, I think to me what sets him apart is he scores perfect in all my boxes. So it's like,
yeah,
Hogan, Austin, Brutal, like, they all have kind of a tick, and Savage just had none. So the only lack of thing you can say, which wasn't the criteria, is he never was the guy.
Yeah,
but you know what? But, he's just as big of a household name as anybody on this list. Like anybody, Macho yes. Man may be the most recognizable wrestler. The voice, the Slim Jims, the name. I mean, you see it today. I saw it. Someone, who the fuck was I? I was at a wedding the other night, and someone was doing elbow off the top. They were saying like I mean, it's like the move, like the go to move of people that aren't even real wrestling fans or remember as a kid the big elbow off the top. You know, like no one fucking does the leg drop, you know, or even the stunner. Like, but the yeah. elbow, the big elbow off the top, the voice, the look, like just to me,
yeah,
he has all that. So if the only ding is he never carried the company, he was never put in a position to. Like, he could have done it. I know he could have done it. And to me, he's a flawless in-ring wrestler. Speed like you've never seen out of a guy of his size.
At the time, too.
And nobody has the storylines of the emotional connection that he has. Give me anyone on this list that has the number of stories that he has. That has that story, that raw emotion, like you said. You have the George Steele feud, the Ricky Steamboat feud, the Mega Powers, you know, DiBiase to an extent, Jake the Snake, Ric Flair, fucking Crush. Like, all those feuds have this yeah. level of, like, personal affliction to it. Warrior, like, all of them. Just, and, you know, and right down, even the Dusty, like, on a lower level, like, everything, it was so personal and so intense. And such a connection, and like he just drew you in to you. He was so open. He just felt so open to every like yeah. everything. Just felt he was like an open book. Like he knew what he was feeling and thinking at all times. Like he just he wore it on his face, and you know just everything about him—the music, the entrance, the look, Elizabeth, and then Sherry, and then Elizabeth—like all of it is just like he makes everything work. He makes fucking Zeus work. You know what I mean? Like everything he touched worked, and like even the stuff with Steel, which I shit on those matches all the time.
They're terrible, yeah.
But they were effective. Like he was great. Steel was over because he wanted his woman, and Savage would not give up his woman. You know, like just all yeah. of it. Like there's so much connection, and the arc is like maybe the most long-term booked arc of all time. Is how Savage treats Liz to start, and then them getting together at 7,
oh,
and where he finally opens the ropes and respects
the
her.
Ropes, yeah.
Yes. Like, that comes so full circle that people are fucking crying in the crowd because, oh my God, he finally respects Elizabeth. You know, like, because even in 88, when he's a face, like, he's still kind of a dick throughout all that time, you know? But he finally sees the light at WrestleMania 7. He's like, you know what? My career is over, and who's been behind me the whole time? Elizabeth. And, like, all of that emotion... like the only ever wedding that goes off without like fucking shenanigans is, you know, sure the reception does, but the wedding itself yeah. meant so much that they didn't fuck with the ceremony. Right. Because there's so much there. And then the Jake feud is just like next level psychology. So to me, nobody touches him on that respect. He's got the matches that you need to have. He's got the title reigns. He was a top guy. He's got WrestleMania main events. Like he's got everything you want. And to me, he's flawless across the spectrum
yeah.
of all the categories that we had in the system.
See, I'm with you on all of that. And I think I made the point at some point, even when we were writing up the write-ups during the project, like I think I love the fact that his entire first run is one big storyline.
Right.
Like even in that Warrior match where he's trying to put him away, he does things in that match where he does the things like where he's trying to do that he did to Steamboat.
Right.
Like he's even telling the story in the match. But throughout this top 10, you've spoken to me so much about volume. Right? And I don't know if he has the volume of a Hogan. Like,
well, he's got 9 years, so what's he short? A year and a half for Hogan?
His top matches, like versus Hogan's top matches, like
I'll take his storylines and jump up moments over Hogan's.
Yes, but Hogan's top. I don't know. Like Hogan Andre is a really good storyline.
Right, like what are his top two stories? Emotional. Hogan Andre and Orndorff, right? I mean, those are probably his two best. I mean, the Piper is great, but it's not like, I mean, you know, like the true stories to me are Orndorff turn and the Andre turn. Like those are his best stories.
Mega Powers cancels it out.
Right.
You were really high on Earthquake. You probably put that third, right? Like,
yeah, that or Piper probably.
I think Hogan Vince is really good. Like as a storyline,
but I mean, to me, the Savage ones trump all those. Like Savage Steamboat, Savage Jake, Savage Warrior. Like those are all comparable.
Savage Flair. That match is. I love that match so much. Yeah. That Savage Flair match. But it's like what are Savage's like three top matches?
Flair
or let's go five. What are his five top matches?
Right. Flair,
Steamboat,
Warrior, both Warriors.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's got a bunch in there. Like I don't know, the Steamboat, Hogan. Yeah. You can say those cancel out if you want. Hogan at five. Yeah. I gotta rewatch. There's a couple of DiBiases in that summer. I'd have to rewatch. I mean, those
because
ones
like he gets credit a lot for being like the early Mr. WrestleMania, and like there's validity there. But like I mean, Hogan like. Let's say you want to discount Andre, mm-hmm. you know, like because you're a work rate freak or whatever. You know, he's still got the Warrior. He's still got the Rock. He's got Vince. Like,
I'd put both Savage Warrior matches over. I think over Hogan Warrior though.
Oh, I wouldn't. I'd put the WrestleMania one over it, but not.
I don't think SummerSlam's too far behind.
I think it is. Like, if I have... Well, what do you have Savage Warrior WrestleMania 7? 5? Do you have it at 5?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I think I would have Warrior Savage at SummerSlam at 4.
And what do you have Hogan Warrior?
I'd probably have it at 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't go that high on that, so...
But it's because that, like... It's because, like... The storytelling in Savage Warrior is great, but nothing feels as epic as Hogan Warrior. And the style that they work is so interesting and different. Like, mm-hmm. anyway, we're nitpicking here at the end, but like,
yeah. Well, to me, again, like, I'm fine saying that the list is maybe two through whatever, and Savage just is my favorite. I mean, I'm fine saying I put my favorite one, but like, I have no issue.
It's my favorite too, right?
Right. I have no issue saying
that's
that.
Why we
but
get
I,
along.
I, but I think there's like, a valid case. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like. I'm not putting like fucking Rey Mysterio one, right? I mean, you know, I think there's like a
that'd be crazy,
right? So I'm not doing something like that, right? I think there's a, even if I would have put like Angle one, right? Like, I mean, there's not really a case there. I could say he's my favorite, but to me, Savage is both my favorite, and I just think he hits all those boxes. Sure, his matches may not rival Hogan's, but I think everything else is better. I think he's a better promo. His stories are better. His memorable moments, I think, are more. His nuance is better. His character is better. Like Hogan never really had a heel run in WWF. Savage excelled at both. Like he was a top notch heel and a top notch face, which Hogan doesn't have in the WWF. And you could argue he should have been maybe toward the end. Like I think we can't overlook that last couple of years for Hogan. After 7, like he's got some good stuff in there, but the crowds are pretty much checked out on him. So they never turn on Savage. Like, and I always said even here. In Providence, like Savage and Brett were always the Providence guys. Like Savage was just beloved, and I think that's everywhere. Like the crowd never turned on him. And even looking at like even stuff like Jesse Ventura, right, as a heel commentator, love yeah, Savage like, even as a face, right? Because everyone, I mean, he's just so damn good, you had to respect him, whereas he just, yeah. you know, slaughters Hogan. But, like, to me, the difference is Savage, Hogan post, like, 88, when he kind of becomes more formulaic, is still great, but he becomes, yeah. he just becomes a bit more of a cartoon and a caricature. And Savage never succumbed to that. Even when he was doing the Macho King stuff, he made it seem real. He believed he was a fucking king. Yeah. You know, like, and he acted like it. He wasn't, like, nothing ever felt hokey with him. Everything just felt real. And, like, that's a big part of it. Like, with Hogan, there was a lot of hokiness in the later years.
You know, it's funny in the end because, like, we have, like, over the course of these podcasts, you and I, you've often taken me to task for, like, choosing little moments or, like,
right.
Or like character stuff over volume and whatnot. And it's, I just think it's interesting that in the end, that's what's selling Savage on you too. Not that it's your whole thing, because obviously right. not. You made a great point for him. But in the end, like...
But I think he's got volume. I mean, if he had like a three-year run...
I don't think he has a volume problem. But I think it's a nice coda.
Right.
It works out well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could see the argument for him not being one. Like you're saying. I mean, if Austin would have finished one or Hogan, I wouldn't have been pissed about it.
I don't know. Right. I was happy he finished one. Like, right. I was legitimately happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Hogan, Austin, or even like if Bruno would have shocked and like any of those guys would have finished one, I would have been fine. You know, like I would have been okay with it. Even Rock, I probably would have been fine. Like you know, it's like fine. But like for me, he's the best of all time, and I can't be talked out of it. So I won't be.
Right.
And I get why there may be an issue, but I mean, I don't think you can have him much lower. He hit all 118 balance. His low vote was only 23. So right behind Austin, and obviously high at number one, average rank 4.9. So there you have it. That's who made the cut. We're done, Aaron. It's been nine episodes that we've done of this, and
nice.
We finish our list. That's less episodes than Nate and Scott. I think they're going to do 10, and we finish before them. So boom,
yep.
Roasted.
Hey-o.
So we're not done, right? We're done with this project. We're not done doing podcasts, though. We have other stuff we're going to talk about.
We're not done with each other.
Never. We're going to talk our tag teams. We're going to do that stuff for the greatest tag team ever. We'll do other stuff, too. We get this upcoming hint of something coming up the site. We'll be working together on a couple things. So we're going to be doing Breaking Call Saul.
Breaking Call Saul?
You know, we're doing other stuff. So we'll be working together,
yeah,
and we'll be talking about it.
And happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you, officially. And we did it in 1 year.
Yeah,
we
right.
talked all about making the cut. And made the cut.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you lasted this long, then you made the cut.
Yes, of our hearts. All right, that's it. We're done. That's our list. Finally. You know, it probably didn't help that we did like 15 honorable mentions too. We probably could have lopped those off. Just fucking did the 100. But anyway, we churned it out. We powered through. We did like 3 in a week just to get done, and we're done. So we can't say we have hanging over us any longer. All right, you kept me up very late. I'm out. We'll talk to you guys soon. We love you all. I'm glad you took part of the project. You'd be sure to do the tag team meeting.
My champion.
Soaring with the eagles and slithering with the snakes, I've been everywhere in between. I am your friend, I am the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Speaking from the heart is the Macho Man talking to you right now. Let's rock. Dig it, dig it. Freak out, freak out. Oh yeah, this is the way it is, and I will be there with you when it happens. The past, the present, and the future, all at one time.